Darius is a composite. The blockages, the conversations, the doors that closed are real, and they are closing across London now. This is their story. In transport infrastructure, where London desperately needs better connections between its growing residential areas and employment hubs, qualified engineers find themselves locked out of the work they trained for. The expertise exists, the materials are available, but the projects remain unbuilt while Treasury doctrine treats public investment like household savings.
I grew up watching the Piccadilly line trains curve past our house in Hounslow, carrying people to jobs I couldn't imagine yet. My dad worked maintenance at Heathrow, and he'd tell me about the engineering that kept the airport running, the precision required to move millions of passengers safely. When I got into Brunel to study civil engineering, I thought I'd found my path. 8 years working on infrastructure projects across London confirmed it. I love the complexity of moving people and goods through a city that never stops growing. Then the pandemic hit, contracts dried up, and my firm let half of us go. I kept my head up. London wasn't getting smaller. The need for better transport. Port links was obvious. To anyone who tried to get from Brentford to central London on a weekday morning, or watched the gridlock around Heathrow when the M4 slowed to a crawl. When I heard about plans for new rail connections in West London, I went straight to Transport for London. I'd worked on their projects before. I knew the planning processes, understood the technical challenges of threading new routes through existing infrastructure. At their offices in Windsor House, the recruitment team was polite but firm. "We're not hiring due to constrained capital budgets from the Department for Transport," the manager told me. "The funding just isn't there for new staff." It sounded reasonable. Everyone understood that budgets were tight. I tried Network Rail next, thinking their perspective might be different. Same story. Treasury spending reviews have limited our ability to take on new stuff, their HR director explained over the phone. "We'd love to expand the team, but there is no funding." Crossrail, Lutard, gave me an identical response about reduced government funding allocations. Each conversation felt like an echo of the last one. The message was consistent across every transport body. The money wasn't there. I decided to strengthen my qualifications while I waited for the situation to improve. I enrolled in project management certification courses, thinking additional skills might make me more competitive when hiring resumed. But half the places on each course sat empty. The training provider explained why. Local authorities can no longer afford to send staff for training. The councils want to upskill their teams, but the professional development budgets have been cut. That's when I started to notice the contradictions. Walking past the old British Rail training facility in Feltham one afternoon, I found three other engineers from my former firm doing the same qualification I was. The building stood locked and overgrown, weeds pushing through the car park tarmac. We'd all been told the same thing. There was no money for transport infrastructure investment. Yet here we were, four qualified engineers with decades of combined experience, studying for certificates we couldn't afford to complete, standing outside a training center that had been abandoned. Marcus, who'd specialize in track design, pointed at the building. "They used to train hundreds of railway engineers here every year. Now look at it." Sarah, our former project coordinator, shook her head. "And they're telling us there's no capacity to expand the workforce." The building was real. We were real. The skills we'd learned were real. The need for better transport connections was obvious to anyone who'd tried to get across West London during rush hour. So what exactly was it that there was no money for? I started paying closer attention to what I was being told. The Department for Transport had chosen not to fund new projects. HM Treasury had chosen to limit transport spending. These weren't acts of nature or mathematical impossibilities. They were decisions made by people in offices, people who could have chosen differently. The government that issues the pound sterling was telling me it couldn't find enough pounds to hire engineers who were standing ready to work. The same government that had created billions of pounds for bank bailouts and quantitative easing programs. The same government that found money for tax cuts and corporate subsidies without asking where the funding would come from. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were. All of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says, we cannot afford it, except the household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here, still watching, still applying for positions when they occasionally appear. But I understand now that what happened to me wasn't bad luck or economic inevitability. It was the result of a political choice to treat government spending like household budgeting. To pretend that the institution that creates money must somehow find money before it can spend money. Every day, I see the evidence that this logic is wrong. The Piccadilly line trains still curve past houses in Hounslow, volte tutte no doubto, more crowded than they were when I was a child. The traffic around Heathrow gets worse each year. The materials to build better connections exist. The workers to build them exist. The need for them is obvious to everyone who lives here. The only thing missing is the political will to acknowledge that government spending is not household spending, and that the choice to leave people and resources idle is exactly that, a choice.
What Darius experienced has a name, logical fallacy. A logical fallacy is when someone makes an argument based on flawed reasoning that sounds convincing but falls apart under examination. Take the analogy between a goldfish bowl and the ocean. Both contain water, but comparing them as though they work the same way ignores their fundamental differences in size, complexity, and ecosystem. Every time someone told Darius there is no money, they were applying exactly this kind of false reasoning. They treated the UK government budget like a household budget because both involve spending money. But households must earn or borrow money before they spend it. Governments that issue their own currency create money when they spend it. When HM Treasury claimed it couldn't afford to hire transport engineers, it was applying household logic to a currency issuer. A household saves up for an extension by setting money aside. The UK government builds infrastructure by instructing the Bank of England to credit accounts, creating the pounds as it spends them. The real constraint was never money. It was resources, engineers, steel, concrete, time. In Darius's case, the engineers existed, the materials were available, and the need was obvious. The only shortage was the political willingness to connect them. The resources existed, the people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Brentford and Isleworth ranks 188 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, published by MHCLG. The constituency has 936 registered charities, according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Total grants received amount to £36.5 million, according to 360 Giving Grant NAV. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.